message. Your permission? Percy snarled. Yes. Bacchus raised an eyebrow. Although your voyage may be a little harder than you expect, son of Neptune. Poseidon, Percy corrected him automatically. What do you mean about my voyage?
You might try the parking lot behind the Emmanuel building, Bacchus said. Best place to break through. Now, goodbye, my friends. And, good luck with that other little matter.
The god vaporized in a cloud of mist that smelled faintly of grape juice. Jason ran to meet Piper and Nico. Coach Hedge trotted up to Percy, with Hazel, Frank, and Leo close behind.
Was that Dionysus?
Hedge asked.
I love that guy!
You're alive, Percy said to the others. The giant said you were captured. What happened? Leo shrugged.
Oh, just another brilliant plan by Leo Valdez. You'd be amazed what you can do with an Archimedes sphere, a girl who can send stuff underground, and a weasel.
I was the weasel, Frank said glumly.
Basically, Leo explained, I activated a hydraulic screw with the Archimedes device, which is going to be awesome once I install it in the ship, by the way. Hazel sensed the easiest path to drill to the surface. We made a tunnel big enough for a weasel, and Frank climbed up with a simple transmitter that I slapped together. After that, it was just a matter of hacking into Coach Hedge's favorite satellite channels and telling him to bring the ship around to rescue us. After he got us, finding you was easy, thanks to that godly light show at the Coliseum.
Percy understood about 10% of Leo's story, but he decided it was enough since he had a more pressing question.
Where's Annabeth?
Leo winced.
Yeah, about that. She's still in trouble, we think. Hurt. Broken leg, maybe. At least according to this vision Gia showed us. Rescuing her is our next stop.
2 seconds before, Percy had been ready to collapse. Now another surge of adrenaline coursed through his body. He wanted to strangle Leo and demand why the Argo II hadn't sailed off to rescue Annabeth first. But he thought that might sound a little ungrateful.
Tell me about the vision, he said. Tell me everything.
The floor shook. The wooden planks began to disappear, spilling sand into the pits of the hypogeum below.
Let's talk on board, Hazel suggested. We'd better take off while we still can.
They sailed out of the Colosseum and veered south over the rooftops of Rome. All around the Piazza del Colosseo, traffic had come to a standstill. A crowd of mortals had gathered, probably wondering about the strange lights and sounds that had come from the ruins. As far as Percy could see, none of the giant's spectacular plans for destruction had come off successfully. The city looked the same as before. No one seemed to notice the huge Greek trireme rising into the sky. The demigods gathered around the helm. Jason bandaged Piper's sprained shoulder while Hazel sat at the stern, feeding Nico ambrosia. The son of Hades could barely lift his head. His voice was so quiet, Hazel had to lean in whenever he spoke. Frank and Leo recounted what had happened in the room with the Archimedes spheres, and the visions Gia had showed them in the bronze mirror. They quickly decided that their best lead for finding Annabeth was the cryptic advice Bacchus had provided. The Emmanuel building, whatever that was. Frank started typing at the helm's computer while Leo tapped furiously at his controls, muttering,
Emmanuel building, Emmanuel building.
Coach Hedge tried to help by wrestling with an upside-down street map of Rome. Percy knelt next to Jason and Piper.
How's the shoulder?
Piper smiled.
It'll heal. Both of you did great.
Jason elbowed Percy. Not a bad team, you and me.
Better than jousting in a Kansas cornfield, Percy agreed. There it is,
Leo cried, pointing to his monitor.
Frank, you're amazing. I'm setting course.
Frank hunched his shoulders. I just read the name off the screen. Some Chinese tourist marked it on Google Maps.
Leo grinned at the others.
He reads Chinese.
Just a tiny bit, Frank said.
How cool is that?
Guys, Hazel broke in, I hate to interrupt your admiration session, but you should hear this.
She helped Nico to his feet. He'd always been pale, but now his skin looked like powdered milk. His dark, sunken eyes reminded Percy of photos he'd seen of liberated prisoners of war, which Percy guessed Nico basically was.
Thank you, Nico rasped. His eyes darted nervously around the group. I've given up hope.
The past week or so, Percy had imagined a lot of scathing things he might say to Nico when they met again. But the guy looked so frail and sad, Percy couldn't muster much anger.
You knew about the two camps all along, Percy said. You could have told me who I was the first day I arrived at Camp Jupiter, but you didn't.
Nico slumped against the helm.
Percy, I'm sorry. I discovered Camp Jupiter last year. My dad led me there, though I wasn't sure why. He told me the gods had kept the camp separate for centuries and that I couldn't tell anyone. The time wasn't right. But he said it would be important for me to know.
He doubled over in a fit of coughing. Hazel held his shoulders until he could stand again.
I thought Dad meant because of Hazel, Nico continued. I'd need a safe place to take her. But now, I think he wanted me to know about both camps so I'd understand how important your quest was, and so I'd search for the doors of death.
The air turned electric, literally, as Jason started throwing off sparks.
Did you find the doors? Percy asked.
Nico nodded.
I was a fool. I thought I could go anywhere in the underworld. But I walked right into Gia's trap. I might as well have tried running from a black hole.
Frank chewed his lip. What kind of black hole are you talking about?
Nico started to speak, but whatever he needed to say must have been too terrifying. He turned to Hazel. She put her hand on her brother's arm.
Nico told me that the doors of death have two sides. One in the mortal world, one in the underworld. The mortal side of the portal is in Greece. It's heavily guarded by Gia's forces. That's where they brought Nico back into the upper world. Then they transported him to Rome.
Piper must have been nervous because her cornucopia spit out a cheeseburger.
Where exactly in Greece is this doorway?
Nico took a rattling breath.
The House of Hades. It's an underground temple in Epirus. I can mark it on a map, but the mortal side of the portal isn't the problem. In the underworld, the doors of death are in...
A cold pair of hands did the itsy-bitsy spider down Percy's back. A black hole. An inescapable part of the underworld where even Nico D'Angelo couldn't go.
Why hadn't Percy thought of this before?
He'd been to the very edge of that place. He still had nightmares about it.
Tartarus, he guessed. The deepest part of the underworld.
Nico nodded.
They pulled me into the pit, Percy. The things I saw down there.
His voice broke. Hazel pursed her lips.
No mortal has ever been to Tartarus, she explained. At least no one has ever gone in and returned alive. It's the maximum security prison of Hades, where the old Titans and the other enemies of the gods are bound. It's where all monsters go when they die on the earth. It's, well, no one knows exactly what it's like.
Her eyes drifted to her brother. The rest of her thought didn't need to be spoken. No one except Nico. Hazel handed him his black sword. Nico leaned on it like it was an old man's cane.
Now I understand why Hades hasn't been able to close the doors, he said. Even the gods don't go into Tartarus. Even the god of death, Thanatos himself, wouldn't go near that place.
Leo glanced over from the wheel.
So let me guess. We'll have to go there.
Nico shook his head.
It's impossible. I'm the son of Hades, and even I barely survived. Gia's forces overwhelmed me instantly. They're so powerful down there. No demigod would stand a chance. I almost went insane.
Nico's eyes looked like shattered glass. Percy wondered sadly if something inside him had broken permanently.
Then we'll sail for Epirus, Percy said. We'll just close the gates on this side.
I wish it were that easy, Nico said. The doors would have to be controlled on both sides to be closed. It's like a double seal. Maybe, just maybe, all seven of you working together could defeat Gia's forces on the mortal side, at the House of Hades. But unless you had a team fighting simultaneously on the Tartarus side, a team powerful enough to defeat a legion of monsters in their home territory.
There has to be a way, Jason said. Nobody volunteered any brilliant ideas. Percy thought his stomach was sinking. Then he realized the entire ship was descending toward a big building like a palace. Annabeth. Nico's news was so horrible, Percy had momentarily forgotten she was still in danger, which made him feel incredibly guilty.
We'll figure out the Tartarus problem later, he said. Is that the Emmanuel building?
Leo nodded.
Bacchus said something about the parking lot and back? Well, there it is. What now?
Percy remembered his dream of the dark chamber. The evil, buzzing voice of the monster called her ladyship. He remembered how shaken Annabeth had looked when she'd come back from Fort Sumter after her encounter with the spiders. Percy had begun to suspect what might be down in that shrine. Literally the mother of all spiders. He was right, and Annabeth had been trapped down there alone with that creature for hours, her leg broken. At this point, he didn't care if her quest was supposed to be solo or not.
We have to get her out, he said. Well, yeah, Leo agreed, but,
He looked like he wanted to say, what if we're too late? Wisely, he changed tack.
There's a parking lot in the way.
Percy looked at Coach Hedge.
Bacchus said something about breaking through. Coach, you still have ammo for those ballisti?
The satyr grinned like a wild goat.
I thought you'd never ask.
Chapter 49. Annabeth.
Annabeth had reached her terror limit. She'd been assaulted by chauvinist ghosts. She'd broken her ankle. She'd been chased across a chasm by an army of spiders. Now, in severe pain, with her ankle wrapped in boards and bubble wrap, and carrying no weapon except her dagger, she faced Arachne, a monstrous half-spider who wanted to kill her and make a commemorative tapestry about it. In the last few hours, Annabeth had shivered, sweated, whimpered, and blinked back so many tears that her body simply gave up on being scared. Her mind said something like, "Okay, sorry, I can't be any more terrified than I already am." So instead, Annabeth started to think. The monstrous creature picked her way down from the top of the web-covered statue. She moved from strand to strand, hissing with pleasure, her four eyes glittering in the dark. Either she was not in a hurry, or she was slow. Annabeth hoped she was slow. Not that it mattered. Annabeth was in no condition to run, and she didn't like her chances in combat. Arachne probably weighed several hundred pounds. Those barbed legs were perfect for capturing and killing prey. Besides, Arachne probably had other horrible powers, a poisonous bite or web-slinging abilities like an ancient Greek Spider-Man. No, combat was not the answer. That left trickery and brains. In the old legends, Arachne had gotten into trouble because of pride. She'd bragged about her tapestries being better than Athena's, which had led to Mount Olympus's first reality TV punishment program. So you think you can weave better than a goddess? Arachne had lost in a big way. Annabeth knew something about being prideful. It was her fatal flaw as well. She often had to remind herself that she couldn't do everything alone. She wasn't always the best person for every job. Sometimes she got tunnel vision and forgot about what other people needed, even Percy. And she could get easily distracted talking about her favorite projects. But could she use that weakness against the spider? Maybe, if she stalled for time, though she wasn't sure how stalling would help. Her friends wouldn't be able to reach her, even if they knew where to go. The cavalry would not be coming. Still, stalling was better than dying. She tried to keep her expression calm, which wasn't easy with a broken ankle. She limped toward the nearest tapestry, a cityscape of ancient Rome. "Marvelous," she said. "Tell me about this tapestry." Arachne's lips curled over her mandibles.
Why do you care? You're about to die.
Well, yes, Annabeth said. But the way you captured the light is amazing. Did you use real golden thread for the sunbeams? The weaving truly was stunning. Annabeth didn't have to pretend to be impressed. Arachne allowed herself a smug smile.
No, child, not gold. I blended the colors, contrasting bright yellow with darker hues. That's what gives it a three-dimensional effect.
Beautiful. Annabeth's mind split into two different levels, one carrying on the conversation, the other madly grasping for a scheme to survive. Nothing came to her. Arachne had been beaten only once, by Athena herself, and that had taken godly magic and incredible skill in a weaving contest. So, she said, did you see this scene yourself? Arachne hissed, her mouth foaming in a not very attractive way.
You are trying to delay your death. It won't work.
No, no, Annabeth insisted. It just seems a shame that these beautiful tapestries can't be seen by everyone. They belong in a museum. Or...
Or what? Arachne asked.
A crazy idea sprang fully formed from Annabeth's mind, like her mom jumping out of Zeus's noggin. But could she make it work? Nothing, she sighed wistfully. It's a silly thought. Too bad. Arachne scuttled down the statue until she was perched atop the goddess's shield. Even from that distance, Annabeth could smell the spider's stink, like an entire bakery full of pastries left to go bad for a month.
What? The spider pressed. What silly thought?
Annabeth had to force herself not to back away. Broken ankle or no, every nerve in her body pulsed with fear, telling her to get away from the huge spider hovering over her. Oh, it's just that I was put in charge of redesigning Mount Olympus, she said. You know, after the Titan War. I've completed most of the work, but we need a lot of quality public art. The throne room of the gods, for instance. I was thinking your work would be perfect to display there. The Olympians could finally see how talented you are. As I said, it was a silly thought. Arachne's hairy abdomen quivered. Her four eyes glimmered as if she had a separate thought behind each and was trying to weave them into a coherent web.
You're redesigning Mount Olympus, she said. My work. In the throne room.
Well, other places too, Annabeth said. The main pavilion could use several of these. That one with the Greek landscape. The Nine Muses would love that. And I'm sure the other gods would be fighting over your work as well. They'd compete to have your tapestries in their palaces. I guess, aside from Athena, none of the gods has ever seen what you can do. Arachne snapped her mandibles.
Hardly. In the old days, Athena tore up all my best work. My tapestries depicted the gods in rather unflattering ways, you see. Your mother didn't appreciate that.
Rather hypocritical, Annabeth said, since the gods make fun of each other all the time. I think the trick would be to pit one god against another. Ares, for instance, would love a tapestry making fun of my mother. He's always resented Athena. Arachne's head tilted at an unnatural angle.
You would work against your own mother.
I'm just telling you what Ares would like, Annabeth said. And Zeus would love something that made fun of Poseidon. Oh, I'm sure if the Olympians saw your work, they realize how amazing you are. And I'd have to broker a bidding war. As for working against my mother, why shouldn't I? She sent me here to die, didn't she? The last time I saw her in New York, she basically disowned me. Annabeth told her the story. She shared her bitterness and sorrow, and it must have sounded genuine. The spider did not pounce.
This is Athena's nature, Arachne hissed. She casts aside even her own daughter. The goddess
would never allow my tapestries to be shown in the palaces of the gods. She was always jealous of me.
But imagine if you could get your revenge at long last.
By killing you.
I suppose, Annabeth scratched her head. Or by letting me be your agent.
I could get your work into Mount Olympus.
I could arrange an exhibition for the other gods. By the time my mother found out, it would be too late. The Olympians would finally see that your work is better.
Then you admit it, Arachne cried. A daughter of Athena admits I am better. Oh, this is sweet to my ears.
But a lot of good it does you, Annabeth pointed out. If I die down here, you go on living in the dark. Gia destroys the gods, and they never realize you were the better weaver. The spider hissed. Annabeth was afraid her mother might suddenly appear and curse her with some terrible affliction. The first lesson every child of Athena learned, Mom was the best at everything, and you should never, ever suggest otherwise. But nothing bad happened. Maybe Athena understood that Annabeth was only saying these things to save her life. Or maybe Athena was in such bad shape, split between her Greek and Roman personalities, that she wasn't even paying attention.
This will not do, Arachne grumbled. I cannot allow it.
Well, Annabeth shifted, trying to keep her weight off her throbbing ankle. A new crack appeared in the floor, and she hobbled back.
Careful, Arachne snapped. The foundations of this shrine have been eaten away over the centuries.
Annabeth's heartbeat faltered. Eaten away?
You have no idea how much hatred boils beneath us,
the spider said.
The spiteful thoughts of so many monsters trying to reach the Athena Parthenos and destroy it. My webbing is the only thing holding the room together, girl. One false step, and you'll fall all the way to Tartarus. And believe me, unlike the doors of death, this would be a one-way trip, a very hard fall. I will not have you dying before you tell me your plan for my artwork.
Annabeth's mouth tasted like rust. All the way to Tartarus? She tried to stay focused, but it wasn't easy as she listened to the floor creak and crack, spilling rubble into the void below. Right. The plan, Annabeth said. As I said, I'd love to take your tapestries to Olympus and hang them everywhere. You can rub your craftsmanship in Athena's nose for all eternity. But the only way I could do that... No, it's too difficult. You might as well go ahead and kill me.
No,
Arachne cried.
That is unacceptable. It no longer brings me any pleasure to contemplate. I must have my work on Mount Olympus. What must I do?
Annabeth shook her head. Sorry, I shouldn't have said anything. Just push me into Tartarus or something.
I refuse.
Don't be ridiculous. Kill me.
I do not take orders from you. Tell me what I must do,
Or you'll kill me?
Yes. No.
The spider pressed her front legs against her head.
I must show my work on Mount Olympus.
Annabeth tried to contain her excitement. Her plan might actually work, but she still had to convince Arachne to do something impossible. She remembered some good advice Frank Jong had given her. Keep it simple. I suppose I could pull a few strings, she conceded.
I excel at pulling strings, said Arachne. I'm a spider.
Yes, but to get your work shown on Mount Olympus, we'd need a proper audition. I'd have to pitch the idea, submit a proposal, put together a portfolio. Do you have any headshots?
Headshots?
Glossy, black and white? Oh, never mind. The audition piece is the most important thing. These tapestries are excellent, but the gods would require something really special. Something that shows off your talent in the extreme.
Arachne snarled.
Are you suggesting that these are not my best work? Are you challenging me to a contest?
Oh, no, Annabeth laughed. Against me? Gosh, no. You are much too good. It would only be a contest against yourself, to see if you really have what it takes to show your work on Mount Olympus.
Of course I do.
Well, I certainly think so. But the audition, you know, it's a formality. I'm afraid it would be very difficult. Are you sure you don't just want to kill me?
Stop saying that, Arachne screeched. What must I make?
I'll show you. Annabeth unslung her backpack. She took out Daedalus's laptop and opened it. The Delta logo glowed in the dark.
What is that? Arachne asked. Some sort of loom?
In a way, Annabeth said. It's for weaving ideas. It holds a diagram of the artwork you would build. Her fingers trembled on the keyboard. Arachne lowered herself to peer directly over Annabeth's shoulder. Annabeth couldn't help thinking how easily those needle-like teeth could sink into her neck. She opened her 3D imaging program. Her last design was still up. The key to Annabeth's plan, inspired by the most unlikely muse ever. Frank Jong. Annabeth did some quick calculations. She increased the dimensions of the model, then showed Arachne how it could be created. Strands of material woven into strips, then braided into a long cylinder. The golden light from the screen illuminated the spider's face.
You want me to make that? But this is nothing. So small and simple.
The actual size would be much bigger, Annabeth cautioned. You see these measurements? Naturally, it must be large enough to impress the gods. It may look simple, but the structure has incredible properties. Your spider silk would be the perfect material. Soft and flexible, yet hard as steel.
I see, Arachne frowned. But this isn't even a tapestry.
That's why it's a challenge. It's outside your comfort zone. A piece like this, an abstract sculpture, is what the gods are looking for. It would stand in the entry hall of the Olympian throne room for every visitor to see. You would be famous forever. Arachne made a discontented hum in her throat. Annabeth could tell she wasn't going for the idea. Her hands started to feel cold and sweaty.
This would take a great deal of web, the spider complained. More than I could make in a year.
Annabeth had been hoping for that. She calculated the mass and size accordingly. You'd need to unravel the statue, she said. Reuse the silk. Arachne seemed about to object, but Annabeth waved at the Athena Parthenos like it was nothing. What's more important, covering that old statue, or proving your artwork is the best? Of course, you'd have to be incredibly careful. You'd need to leave enough webbing to hold the room together. And if you think it's too difficult...
I didn't say that.
Okay. It's just... Athena said that creating this braided structure would be impossible for any weaver, even her. So if you don't think you can...
Athena said that?
Well, yeah.
Ridiculous! I can do it.
Great! But you'd need to start right away, before the Olympians choose another artist for their installations. Arachne growled.
If you are tricking me, girl.
You'll have me right here as a hostage, Annabeth reminded her. It's not like I can go anywhere. Once this sculpture is complete, you'll agree that it's the most amazing piece you've ever done. If not, I will gladly die. Arachne hesitated. Her barbed legs were so close. She could have impaled Annabeth with a quick swipe.
Fine, the spider said. One last challenge. Against myself.
Arachne climbed her web and began to unravel the Athena Parthenos.
Chapter 50 Annabeth lost track of time. She could feel the ambrosia she'd eaten earlier starting to repair her leg, but it still hurt so badly that the pain throbbed right up to her neck. All along the walls, small spiders scuttled in the darkness, as if awaiting their mistress's orders. Thousands of them rustled behind the tapestries, making the woven scenes move like wind. Annabeth sat on the crumbling floor and tried to preserve her strength. While Arachne wasn't watching, she attempted to get some sort of signal on Daedalus's laptop to contact her friends. But of course she had no luck. That left her nothing to do but watch in amazement and horror as Arachne worked, her eight legs moving with hypnotic speed, slowly unraveling the silk strands around the statue. With its golden clothes and its luminous ivory face, the Athena Parthenos was even scarier than Arachne. It gazed down sternly as if to say, "Bring me tasty snacks or else." Annabeth could imagine being an ancient Greek walking into the Parthenon and seeing this massive goddess with her shield, spear, and python, her free hand holding out Nike, the winged spirit of victory. It would have been enough to put a kink in the chitin of any mortal. More than that, the statue radiated power. As Athena was unwrapped, the air around her grew warmer. Her ivory skin glowed with life. All across the room, the smaller spiders became agitated and began retreating back into the hallway. Annabeth guessed that Arachne's webs had somehow masked and dampened the statue's magic. Now that it was free, the Athena Parthenos filled the chamber with magical energy. Centuries of mortal prayers and burnt offerings had been made in its presence. It was infused with the power of Athena. Arachne didn't seem to notice. She kept muttering to herself, counting out yards of silk and calculating the number of strands her project would require. Whenever she hesitated, Annabeth called out encouragement and reminded her how wonderful her tapestries would look on Mount Olympus. The statue grew so warm and bright that Annabeth could see more details of the shrine. The Roman masonry that had probably once been gleaming white, the dark bones of Arachne's past victims and meals hanging in the web, and the massive cables of silk that connected the floor to the ceiling. Annabeth now saw just how fragile the marble tiles were under her feet. They were covered in a fine layer of webbing, like mesh holding together a shattered mirror. Whenever the Athena Parthenos shifted even slightly, more cracks spread and widened along the floor. In some places, there were holes as big as manhole covers. Annabeth almost wished it were dark again. Even if her plan succeeded and she defeated Arachne, she wasn't sure how she could make it out of this chamber alive.
"So much silk," Arachne muttered. "I could make 20 tapestries."
"Keep going," Annabeth called up. "You're doing a wonderful job." The spider kept working. After what seemed like forever, a mountain of glistening silk was piled at the feet of the statue. The walls of the chamber were still covered in webs. The support cables holding the room together hadn't been disturbed. But the Athena Parthenos was free.
"Please wake up," Annabeth begged the statue. "Mother, help me."
Nothing happened. But the cracks seemed to be spreading across the floor more rapidly. According to Arachne, the malicious thoughts of monsters had eaten away at the shrine's foundations for centuries. If that was true, now that it was free, the Athena Parthenos might be attracting even more attention from the monsters in Tartarus.
"The design," Annabeth said. "You should hurry."
She lifted the computer screen for Arachne to see. But the spider snapped,
"I've memorized it, child. I have an artist's eye for detail."
"Of course you do. But we should hurry."
"Why?"
"Well, so we can introduce your work to the world."
Very well."
Arachne began to weave. It was slow work, turning silk strands into long strips of cloth. The chamber rumbled. The cracks at Annabeth's feet became wider. If Arachne noticed, she didn't seem to care. Annabeth considered trying to push the spider into the pit somehow, but she dismissed the idea. There wasn't a big enough hole, and besides, if the floor gave way, Arachne could probably hang from her silk and escape while Annabeth and the ancient statue would tumble into Tartarus. Slowly, Arachne finished the long strips of silk and braided them together. Her skill was flawless. Annabeth couldn't help being impressed. She felt another flicker of doubt about her own mother. What if Arachne was a better weaver than Athena? But Arachne's skill wasn't the point. She had been punished for being prideful and rude. No matter how amazing you were, you couldn't go around insulting the gods. The Olympians were a reminder that there was always someone better than you, so you shouldn't get a big head. Still, being turned into a monstrous immortal spider seemed like a pretty harsh punishment for bragging. Arachne worked more quickly, bringing the strands together. Soon the structure was done. At the feet of the statue lay a braided cylinder of silk strips, 5 feet in diameter and 10 feet long. The surface glistened like abalone shell, but it didn't seem beautiful to Annabeth. It was just functional. A trap. It would only be beautiful if it worked. Arachne turned to her with a hungry smile.
Done! Now, my reward. Prove to me that you can deliver on your promises.
Annabeth studied the trap. She frowned and walked around it, inspecting the weaving from every angle. Then, careful of her bad ankle, she got down on hands and knees and crawled inside. She'd done the measurements in her head. If she'd gotten them wrong, her plan was doomed. But she slipped through the silken tunnel without touching the sides. The webbing was sticky, but not impossibly so. She crawled out the other end and shook her head. "There's a flaw," she said.
"What?" Arachne cried. "Impossible! I followed your instructions."
"Inside," Annabeth said. "Crawl in and see for yourself. It's right in the middle. A flaw in the weaving." Arachne foamed at the mouth. Annabeth was afraid she'd pushed too hard and the spider would snap her up. She'd be just another set of bones in the cobwebs. Instead, Arachne stamped her 8 legs petulantly.
"I do not make mistakes."
"Oh, it's small," Annabeth said. "You can probably fix it. But I don't want to show the gods anything but your best work. Look, go inside and check. If you can fix it, then we'll show it to the Olympians. You'll be the most famous artist of all time. They'll probably fire the 9 muses and hire you to oversee all the arts. The goddess Arachne." "Yes, I wouldn't be surprised."
"A goddess."
Arachne's breathing turned shallow.
"Yes, yes, I will fix this flaw."
She poked her head into the tunnel.
"Where is it?"
"Right in the middle," Annabeth urged. "Go ahead. It might be a bit snug for you."
"I'm fine," she snapped,
and wriggled in. As Annabeth had hoped, the spider's abdomen fit, but only barely. As she pushed her way in, the braided strips of silk expanded to accommodate her. Arachne got all the way up to her spinnerets.
"I see no flaw," she announced.
"Really?" Annabeth asked. "Well, that's odd. Come out and I'll take another look." Moment of truth. Arachne wriggled, trying to back up. The woven tunnel contracted around her and held her fast. She tried to wriggle forward, but the trap was already stuck to her abdomen. She couldn't get through that way either. Annabeth had been afraid the spider's barbed legs might puncture the silk, but Arachne's legs were pressed so tightly against her body, she could barely move them.
"What? What is this?"
she called.
"I am stuck."
"Ah," Annabeth said. "I forgot to tell you. This piece of art is called Chinese handcuffs. At least, it's a larger variation on that idea. I call it Chinese spider cuffs."
"Treachery!"
Arachne thrashed and rolled and squirmed, but the trap held her tight. "It was a matter of survival," Annabeth corrected. "You were going to kill me either way,
Whether I helped you or not, yes?
Well, of course. You're a child of Athena.
The trap went still.
I mean, no, of course not. I respect my promises.
Uh-huh. Annabeth stepped back as the braided cylinder began to thrash again. Normally these traps are made from woven bamboo, but spider silk is even better. It will hold you fast, and it's much too strong to break, even for you.
Gah!
Arachne rolled and wriggled, but Annabeth moved out of the way. Even with her broken ankle, she could manage to avoid a giant silk finger trap.
I will destroy you, Arachne promised. I mean, no, I'll be very nice to you if you let me out.
I'd save my energy if I were you. Annabeth took a deep breath, relaxing for the first time in hours. I'm going to call my friends.
You're going to call them about my artwork?
Arachne asked hopefully. Annabeth scanned the room. There had to be a way to send an iris message to the Argo, too. She had some water left in her bottle, but how to create enough light and mist to make a rainbow in a dark cavern? Arachne began to roll around again.
You're calling your friends to kill me, she shrieked. I will not die, not like this.
Calm down, Annabeth said. We'll let you live. We just want the statue.
A statue?
Yes. Annabeth should have left it at that, but her fear was turning to anger and resentment. The artwork that I'll display most prominently on Mount Olympus? It won't be yours. The Athena Parthenos belongs there, right in the central park of the gods.
No, no, that's horrible.
Oh, it won't happen right away, Annabeth said. First, we'll take the statue with us to Greece. A prophecy told us it has the power to help defeat the giants. After that, well, we can't simply restore it to the Parthenon. That would raise too many questions. It'll be safer in Mount Olympus. It will unite the children of Athena and bring peace to the Romans and Greeks. Thanks for keeping it safe all these centuries. You've done Athena a great service. Arachne screamed and flailed. A strand of silk shot from the monster's spinnerets and attached itself to a tapestry on the far wall. Arachne contracted her abdomen and blindly ripped away the weaving. She continued to roll, shooting silk randomly, pulling over braziers of magic fire and ripping tiles out of the floor. The chamber shook. Tapestries began to burn.
Stop that!
Annabeth tried to hobble out of the way of the spider's silk. He'll bring down the whole cavern and kill us both!
Better than seeing you win, Arachne cried. My children, help me!
Oh, great. Annabeth had hoped the statue's magic aura would keep away the little spiders, but Arachne continued shrieking, imploring them to help. Annabeth considered killing the spider woman to shut her up. It would be easy to use her knife now. But she hesitated to kill any monster when it was so helpless, even Arachne. Besides, if she stabbed through the braided silk, the trap might unravel. It was possible Arachne could break free before Annabeth could finish her off. All these thoughts came too late. Spiders began swarming into the chamber. The statue of Athena glowed brighter. The spiders clearly didn't want to approach, but they edged forward as if gathering their courage. Their mother was screaming for help. Eventually they would pour in, overwhelming Annabeth.
Arachne, stop it! She yelled.
Somehow Arachne twisted in her prison, pointing her abdomen toward the sound of Annabeth's voice. A strand of silk hit her in the chest like a heavyweight's glove. Annabeth fell, her leg flaring with pain. She slashed wildly at the webbing with her dagger as Arachne pulled her toward her snapping spinnerets. Annabeth managed to cut the strand and crawl away, but the little spiders were closing around her. She realized her best efforts had not been enough. She wouldn't make it out of here. Arachne's children would kill her at the feet of her mother's statue.
Percy, she thought, I'm sorry.
At that moment,
the chamber groaned, and the cavern ceiling exploded in a blast of fiery light. Chapter 51. Annabeth. Annabeth had seen some strange things before, but she'd never seen it rain cars. As the roof of the cavern collapsed, sunlight blinded her. She got the briefest glimpse of the Argo II hovering above. It must have used its ballistae to blast a hole straight through the ground. Chunks of asphalt as big as garage doors tumbled down, along with 6 or 7 Italian cars. One would have crushed the Athena Parthenos, but the statue's glowing aura acted like a force field, and the car bounced off. Unfortunately, it fell straight toward Annabeth. She jumped to one side, twisting her bad foot. A wave of agony almost made her pass out, but she flipped on her back in time to see a bright red Fiat 500 slam into Arachne's silk trap, punching through the cavern floor and disappearing with the Chinese spider cuffs. As Arachne fell, she screamed like a freight train on a collision course, but her wailing rapidly faded. All around Annabeth, more chunks of debris slammed through the floor, riddling it with holes. The Athena Parthenos remained undamaged, though the marble under its pedestal was a starburst of fractures. Annabeth was covered in cobwebs. She trailed strands of leftover spider silk from her arms and legs like the strings of a marionette, but somehow, amazingly, none of the debris had hit her. She wanted to believe that the statue had protected her, though she suspected it might have been nothing but luck. The army of spiders had disappeared. Either they had fled back into the darkness, or they'd fallen into the chasm. As daylight flooded the cavern, Arachne's tapestries along the walls crumbled to dust, which Annabeth could hardly bear to watch, especially the tapestry depicting her and Percy. But none of that mattered when she heard Percy's voice from above.
"Annabeth! Here!"
she sobbed. All the terror seemed to leave her in one massive yelp. As the Argo II descended, she saw Percy leaning over the rail. His smile was better than any tapestry she'd ever seen. The room kept shaking, but Annabeth managed to stand. The floor at her feet seemed stable for the moment. Her backpack was missing, along with Daedalus's laptop. Her bronze knife, which she'd had since she was 7, was also gone. Probably fallen into the pit. But Annabeth didn't care. She was alive. She edged closer to the gaping hole made by the Fiat 500. Jagged rock walls plunged into the darkness as far as Annabeth could see. A few small ledges jutted out here and there, but Annabeth saw nothing on them. Just strands of spider silk dripping over the sides like Christmas tinsel. Annabeth wondered if Arachne had told the truth about the chasm. Had the spider fallen all the way to Tartarus? She tried to feel satisfied with that idea, but it made her sad. Arachne had made some beautiful things. She'd already suffered for eons. Now her last tapestries had crumbled. After all that, falling into Tartarus seemed like too harsh an end. Annabeth was dimly aware of the Argo II hovering to a stop about 40 feet from the floor. It lowered a rope ladder. But Annabeth stood in a daze, staring into the darkness. Then suddenly Percy was next to her, lacing his fingers in hers. He turned her gently away from the pit and wrapped his arms around her. She buried her face in his chest and broke down in tears.
"It's okay," he said. "We're together."
He didn't say, "You're okay," or "We're alive." After all they'd been through over the last year, he knew the most important thing was that they were together. She loved him for saying that. Their friends gathered around them. Nico D'Angelo was there, but Annabeth's thoughts were so fuzzy, this didn't seem surprising to her. It seemed only right that he would be with them.
"Your leg."
Piper knelt next to her and examined the bubble wrap cast.
"Oh, Annabeth, what happened?"
She started to explain. Talking was difficult. But as she went along, her words came more easily. Percy didn't let go of her hand, which also made her feel more confident. When she finished, her friends' faces were slack with amazement.
"Gods of Olympus," Jason said. "You did all that alone. With a broken ankle."
"Well,
some of it with a broken ankle.
Percy grinned.
You made Arachne weave her own trap? I knew you were good. But holy Hera, Annabeth, you did it. Generations of Athena kids tried and failed. You found the Athena Parthenos.
Everyone gazed at the statue.
What do we do with her? Frank asked. She's huge.
We'll have to take her with us to Greece, Annabeth said. The statue is powerful. Something about it will help us stop the giants. The giant's bane stands golden pale, Hazel quoted. One with pain from a woven jail. She looked at Annabeth with admiration. It was Arachne's jail. You tricked her into weaving it.
With a lot of pain, Annabeth thought.
Leo raised his hands. He made a finger picture frame around the Athena Parthenos like he was taking measurements.
Well, it might take some rearranging, but I think we can fit her through the bay doors in the stable. If she sticks out the end, I might have to wrap a flag around her feet or something.
Annabeth shuddered. She imagined the Athena Parthenos jutting from their trireme with a sign across her pedestal that read, Wide Load. Then she thought about the other lines of the prophecy. The twins snuff out the angel's breath who holds the keys to endless death.
What about you guys? She asked. What happened with the giants?
Percy told her about rescuing Nico, the appearance of Bacchus, and the fight with the twins in the Colosseum. Nico didn't say much. The poor guy looked like he'd been wandering through a wasteland for 6 weeks. Percy explained what Nico had found out about the doors of death and how they had to be closed on both sides. Even with sunlight streaming in from above, Percy's news made the cavern seem dark again. So the mortal side is in Epirus, she said. At least that's somewhere we can reach. Nico grimaced.
But the other side is the problem. Tartarus.
The word seemed to echo through the chamber. The pit behind them exhaled a cold blast of air. That's when Annabeth knew with certainty. The chasm did go straight to the underworld. Percy must have felt it too. He guided her a little farther from the edge. Her arms and legs trailed spider silk like a bridal train. She wished she had her dagger to cut that junk off. She almost asked Percy to do the honors with Riptide, but before she could, he said,
Bacchus mentioned something about my voyage being harder than I expected. Not sure why.
The chamber groaned. The Athena Parthenos tilted to one side, its head caught on one of Arachne's support cables. But the marble foundation under the pedestal was crumbling. Nausea swelled in Annabeth's chest. If the statue fell into the chasm, all her work would be for nothing. Their quest would fail.
Secure it! Annabeth cried.
Her friends understood immediately.
John! Leo cried. Get me to the helm, quick! The coach is up there alone!
Frank transformed into a giant eagle, and the two of them soared toward the ship. Jason wrapped his arm around Piper. He turned to Percy.
Back for you guys in a sec. He summoned the wind and shot into the air.
This floor won't last, Hazel warned. The rest of us should get to the ladder.
Plumes of dust and cobwebs blasted from holes in the floor. The spider's silk support cables trembled like massive guitar strings and began to snap. Hazel lunged for the bottom of the rope ladder and gestured for Nico to follow, but Nico was in no condition to sprint. Percy gripped Annabeth's hand tighter.
It'll be fine, he muttered.
Looking up, she saw grappling lines shoot from the Argo II and wrap around the statue. One lassoed Athena's neck like a noose. Leo shouted orders from the helm as Jason and Frank flew frantically from line to line trying to secure them. Nico had just reached the ladder when a sharp pain shot up Annabeth's bad leg. She gasped and stumbled.
What is it?
Percy asked. She tried to stagger toward the ladder. Why was she moving backward instead? Her legs swept out from under her, and she fell on her face.
Her ankle!
Hazel shouted from the ladder.
Cut it! Cut it!
Annabeth's mind was woolly from the pain. Cut her ankle? Apparently Percy didn't realize what Hazel meant either. Then something yanked Annabeth backward and dragged her toward the pit. Percy lunged. He grabbed her arm, but the momentum carried him along as well.
Help them!
Hazel yelled. Annabeth glimpsed Nico hobbling in their direction, Hazel trying to disentangle her cavalry sword from the rope ladder. Their other friends were still focused on the statue, and Hazel's cry was lost in the general shouting and the rumbling of the cavern. Annabeth sobbed as she hit the edge of the pit. Her legs went over the side. Too late, she realized what was happening. She was tangled in the spider silk. She should have cut it away immediately. She had thought it was just loose line, but with the entire floor covered in cobwebs, she hadn't noticed that one of the strands was wrapped around her foot, and the other end went straight into the pit. It was attached to something heavy down in the darkness, something that was pulling her in.
No,
Percy muttered, light dawning in his eyes.
My sword!
But he couldn't reach Riptide without letting go of Annabeth's arm, and Annabeth's strength was gone. She slipped over the edge. Percy fell with her. Her body slammed into something. She must have blacked out briefly from the pain. When she could see again, she realized that she'd fallen part way into the pit and was dangling over the void. Percy had managed to grab a ledge about 15 feet below the top of the chasm. He was holding on with one hand, gripping Annabeth's wrist with the other, but the pull on her leg was much too strong.
No escape, said a voice in the darkness below. I go to Tartarus, and you will come too.
Annabeth wasn't sure if she actually heard Arachne's voice, or if it was just in her mind. The pit shook. Percy was the only thing keeping her from falling. He was barely holding on to a ledge the size of a bookshelf. Nico leaned over the edge of the chasm, thrusting out his hand, but he was much too far away to help. Hazel was yelling for the others, but even if they heard her over all the chaos, they'd never make it in time. Annabeth's leg felt like it was pulling free of her body. Pain washed everything in red. The force of the underworld tugged at her like dark gravity. She didn't have the strength to fight. She knew she was too far down to be saved.
Percy, let me go, she croaked. You can't pull me up.
His face was white with effort. She could see in his eyes that he knew it was hopeless.
Never,
he said. He looked up at Nico 15 feet above.
The other side, Nico. We'll see you there. Understand?
Nico's eyes widened.
But lead them there, Percy shouted. Promise me.
I will.
Below them, the voice laughed in the darkness.
Sacrifices. Beautiful sacrifices to wake the goddess.
Percy tightened his grip on Annabeth's wrist. His face was gaunt, scraped and bloody, his hair dusted with cobwebs, but when he locked eyes with her, she thought he had never looked more handsome.
We're staying together, he promised. You're not getting away from me. Never again.
Only then did she understand what would happen.
A one-way trip. A very hard fall.
As long as we're together, she said.
She heard Nico and Hazel still screaming for help. She saw the sunlight far, far above. Maybe the last sunlight she would ever see. Then Percy let go of his tiny ledge, and together, holding hands, he and Annabeth fell into the endless darkness. Chapter 52. Leo. Leo was still in shock. Everything had happened so quickly. They had secured grappling lines to the Athena Parthenos just as the floor gave way and the final columns of webbing snapped. Jason and Frank dived down to save the others, but they'd only found Nico and Hazel hanging from the rope ladder. Percy and Annabeth were gone. The pit to Tartarus had been buried under several tons of debris. Leo pulled the Argo II out of the cavern seconds before the entire place imploded, taking the rest of the parking lot with it. The Argo II was now parked on a hill overlooking the city. Jason, Hazel, and Frank had returned to the scene of the catastrophe, hoping to dig through the rubble and find a way to save Percy and Annabeth. but they'd come back, be more